Welcome back to Beers and Buckets. It has been several months, I think six to be exact, a little under 6 months since we've last recorded. And so I asked Dal, how have you been the last 6 months since we've recorded last?
Pretty good. Glad to be back. I have moved to Nashville, so new city for me in the last little bit. I'm dog sitting our family dog right now. She is sleeping on the bed. So pretty good. How about you, man? How's the football season going?
Football season has been fun and terrible at the same time. So we start off strong. We had a exhibition, you know, kickoff classic that we won. And then, so we won that one. And then we go into week one at home. We had black jerseys, but we decided to do a blue out for this first home game. And we were playing a really bad team. We won 44-6. And then we're like, oh man, week two, we have this really tough opponent, but we could play strong. We got blown out, and then it's just been downhill ever since, because injuries have been killing us. We had a very much a spread offense that we've had to not make a spread offense because we are running out of receivers due to ankle and knees and concussions. So it has been challenging to say the least, but nonetheless, we have a very, very winnable homecoming game on a freaking Thursday this week.
Weird.
There's a ref shortage, and I guess because we suck, we get to move our homecoming game to Thursday because of the ref shortage. That makes sense. But, so there's that. But all that to say is I hope we get this W. We could double our win total from last year from 1-2 and keep it rolling. But we've already outscored our season total from last year. So I'll take it. You gotta take what you can get there. So
it's progress right there, baby. That's all I hear. Yeah.
So I've been heavily involved in calling the plays, which is why we had to take a serious break from recording each week, because I was just slammed, you know, coming up with almost a new offense every week. But I'm here to talk basketball tonight. So before we go any further, Beers and Buckets is part of the Variety Sports Network. So check them out on Twitter. At @variety_sports_. So let's get this thing started, man. We have a fun show planned for you tonight or today, whenever you're listening, because it's not a live show. But we are going to do a beer review. We are going to do some ACC hot topics. We're going to do some team rankings. We're going to draft our all conference team for the ACC, and then lastly, we're going to do some season superlatives. So. Before we go any further, the first part of Beers and Buckets is beer. So let's do our beer review. What do you got for us tonight, Dal?
It's funny because this is a spoiler for yours as well. But I thought we had beer in the fridge. Turns out I took it all to the Bengals Titans tailgate on Sunday. So we're starting off Beers and Buckets recap with a little bourbon. This is Wilderness Trail's Weeded Bourbon. Wilderness Trail is from my hometown in Danville, Kentucky. Nice little bottle here. It's 50% ABV, 100 proof. Yeah, like I said, this is their weeded one. It's probably my favorite of theirs, but they have like a rye one. They have a normal one. It's a pretty good time. I've had it before, so this isn't me tasting it for the first time. But for being 100 proof, it's really, really smooth. Also great in cocktails if you are into that kind of thing. Yeah, it's pretty light, kind of. More like yellowy than brown, as shown by the bottle as well. So yeah, got a little on the rocks here today. And
nice. Nice. So I figure you don't have a score for us tonight on that because a lot of those categories do not apply to.
Yeah, it's definitely not overly crushable. I wouldn't suggest just like throwing a bunch back. That's a good way to get in trouble, especially on a Monday night. So. Yeah, I mean, if I did this, it would be overall pretty low. The can is not a can, so 0 out of 5. aroma, great. Flavor, great. Appearance, it's suburban, so like, sure. But crushability and can design definitely would drop this in terms of overall ranking. So we'll kind of just leave this one out and let it
be. That makes sense. All right. So I'm drinking the Country Boy Brewing Orange Cream Cider. My light is making the can very washed out if you're trying to watch the video of this. But it is brewed in Lexington, Kentucky. It's a dry cider, gluten-free, 6.9% with zero IBUs. Untappd has it as a 3.87, but obviously we can't trust Untappd rankings because everyone puts it right at like 3.5. So on our own scale, the crushability, 5 out of 5. I could almost chug one of these instantly. Not too sweet, and that's why I like it. A lot of ciders are too sweet. This one's not too sweet. It's pretty good. Can design is pretty boring, though. It's pretty basic. There's nothing to it.
Country Boy leans that way in general, I feel like.
Yeah. So I put that as a 2.5 out of 5. Aroma, I mean, it smells like a creamsicle, but it isn't super beery smelling, so I'll give it a 4 out of 5 there. Flavor is 5 out of 5. And then appearance, I mean, it's just standard orange. So I put it like 3.5. So overall, after I averaged it out, it came out to 4 out of 5. So highly recommend it. My wife does not like beers at all, but she likes ciders. So I'm saving it was a 4-pack for like $12. I'm saving the other two for her because I drank one earlier. I'm drinking one now. And being that 6.9 is going to be, I haven't drank a lot like lately either. So it's going to be a little crazy, a little loopy tonight. Maybe some of these takes I could justify later on when we come back to these takes on about the ACC. I could blame the ciders on that. 6.9% ciders on these crazy takes, because we're going to go ahead and jump into the ACC hot topics. So let's get into it, Dal. To start, we're just hopping right out of the gate. Duke Blue Devils. Yep. Are they overrated, properly rated, or underrated?
Qualifying question. Are we talking about in the context of this year, like this upcoming season?
Correct.
Or in general?
This upcoming season.
Okay. This upcoming season, they're probably properly rated, just because I think this year's incoming freshman class is down. Plus Kentucky got like half of the top recruits. So like no one else has any good recruits because we got them all. So I feel like that this year's college basketball season is going to be honestly kind of like this year's college football season, where there's a bunch of teams that are going to be in contention for it. You don't have anyone that's like far and away the top team. Yeah. Even like Georgia this year in football looks very, very like beatable in terms of comparing them to the other top teams. So I think Duke will have a ton of talent. I mean, they have like 3 or 4 guys that are projected to go top 30-ish in the NBA draft next year, as we like currently sit. So I think in terms of the overall season, they're probably about properly rated, being one of the 4 or 5 best teams. But I think this year will just be like a down year relative to other years in college basketball. So if you're like kind of trying to place them historically, they're probably a little bit overrated. But
yeah, in terms of this season, I think they're probably properly rated. I do think, however, that the loss of Derek Lively is going to show. As good as Filipowski is, replacing Derek Lively on defense is going to be hard to replace. I mean, like, there's a reason he got drafted while being as bad as he was offensively. It's because that he could defend anybody on the perimeter. Like, it doesn't matter who. And he was defending the rim, like, super well, too.
Yeah, his rim defense is definitely going to be something that they will sorely miss.
Yeah, and like I said, Filipowski, absolutely going to be one of the best players in college basketball this year. I don't know how his game translates to the pros, and we've talked about him in that regards. So I think him coming back to Duke was a really good choice, because he's not going to lose any money by doing this. NIL is making him a lot of money already. And I think he gets to reap the benefits of, like, he might boost his stock, but I don't think he's going to drop his stock by returning. So
yeah, hopefully that surgery he had to, like, I think it was essentially, I think there was some like injury, but it's also like kind of like open his hips up a little bit and make him more fluid, because that's what's really going to hold him back on the defensive end.
Yeah.
Just looking at this, like, all right, outside of Filipowski, who is 6'10 or 6'11, they have Ryan Young, who is 6'10". Outside of that, they're tallest. They have one guy at 6'9", two that are 6'8". They're really going to struggle. Like, I mean, Mark Mitchell's going to be playing a lot of the four for them. And he is, I mean, I wouldn't say he's a great rim protector. So when Filipowski isn't on the floor, they might struggle to guard at the rim, which could end up coming back to bite them.
Yeah. I will say they also did get a 6'9 freshman forward in Sean Stewart, who I think is going to be pretty good.
TJ Powers also 6'9 for them. Like, they'll have some size, I guess, there, but no one that's really like super tall.
There's no Derek Lively on this team. That's gonna rear its ugly head sooner rather than later. But they're still a really good team. And they're preseason number one for a reason. And I think returning Filipowski is that reason. They still would have been a top 25 team without Filipowski returning. That just secured their status as like a top five, top three team in college basketball going into the season. However, we've seen sophomore slumps plenty of times before, right? So,
especially coming off double hip surgery, like that could go wrong too.
Yeah, we're not going to sit here and try and get clicks by saying these guys are overrated or these guys are underrated. They're properly rated going into the season, but we will see how that pans out. You know, so yeah. All right, next question I have for you in this hot topic section, UNC. How hot is Hubert Davis's seat right now?
Right now, I bet it's probably hotter in like on Twitter than it actually is. I think it's always the case with guys that are like legacy coaches where they went to the school. That's obviously the case with him. As much as we like to poo-poo it because it obviously was shown that it wasn't like overly indicative of their season. Last two seasons, they still made a national championship 2 years ago.
And they had a 15-point lead in that national championship, too. Yeah, that's like, the crazy part.
Yeah, so, like, as much as we're like, yeah, that was a fluke, like, it still happened. So you can't fully discount that. I feel like that probably bought him a decent amount of, like, leniency with the administration there. They do have, I mean, their top, like, five of their top six rotation this year will be either like super seniors or juniors. So if they can't get it done this year, I think by the end of the year, his seat could be really hot if they don't come out and kind of perform. But I think right now it's probably just like kind of lukewarm, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. My thing on UNC and Hubert Davis is that like he exceeded expectations in year one, which may set him up for failure in years two and three. Yeah. We're kind of seeing the NFL version in the Bengals a little bit, right? Like Zach Taylor, Joe Burrow, they were not expected to make the Super Bowl 2 years ago.
Yeah,
they make the Super Bowl. They make the Super Bowl. Then they lose the AFC West championship or, you know, whatever, AFC championship. And now they're 1-4. Like, like I feel like we're seeing a similar thing with UNC. However, unlike the Bengals, who didn't draft like amazingly because they've obviously had success in the last two postseasons, UNC had an amazing offseason. I mean, you look at who they got in. Cormac Ryan was a great player at Notre Dame. Harrison Ingram, obviously, like we're going to talk about him later, but a very good player at Stanford. And then the amount of they got Jalen Withers, who was a, you know, four win Louisville team, but he's still depth. They got James Okongwu. Is that how you pronounce it? Okongwu from West Virginia. Sure. Like they just got experienced depth. Plus they get a couple, you know, handful of freshmen. So, and then you returned Outer Banks star himself, Armando Bacot. You know, like you're not.
That's the worst part. That's the biggest red flag in this whole fucking thing.
He still has national championship experience, and he's like,
get a job.
His job was Outer Banks, and now he's in his fifth year at UNC, and he's going like he has nothing to lose, man. He has absolutely nothing to lose here. So, you have a lot of experience in the starting lineup, and you can surround these freshmen around some quality guys that, you know, you don't know what you're going to get out Elliot Cadeau, but you're going to have experience around to make up for it. So
spoiler alert, my pick later, but
okay. all right. Next topic, Louisville. What will it take for Kenny Payne to keep his job this year? Because that seed is hot as heck. It is hot. There's no denying it.
I don't know, man. Beating Kentucky.
What reasonable thing will it take for?
I don't have an answer for you then if you're asking me about reasonable shit.
Would it take him to double his win total from last year? And I mean, let's look at, I'm going to look at their schedule while you're talking. I'm going
to
look at their
schedule. I think they would need to make like an NIT.
I mean,
they go gangbusters in recruiting and have a sick class for next year.
The problem
is that would give him some leniency, but like, even still,
recruiting was the issue last year. They didn't recruit well. Obviously, he was like late to the game there. And then this season, he didn't recruit well this season with freshmen. Like, didn't do much. And he hit the freshman. But I do not blame Kenny Payne for that at all. And it turned like karma absolutely reared its ugly head for him. So it is what it is. I mean, they have UMBC. It's a winnable game. Chattanooga, not what they were. That's a winnable. You know, like they have a lot of favorable games. And it should be a better team this year than last year. It really should. So like Bellarmine, that was like it came down to the wire, and that like last year that this team's a much better team this year. They should win that game. You know what I mean? So like I think if they double their win total, so from 4 to 8, which sounds terrible, but at least.
Yes, dude.
Yeah, I mean, like, let's say he has to go from 4 to 10 wins. He can there. You look at their schedule; they have 10 wins available somewhere, somehow, and get a couple conference wins.
Yeah, we'll talk about it obviously with the team rankings, but the ACC isn't super super strong this year, so it should be possible. I think he's got to get to like 11 or 12 at the very least, especially with some of their non, like they should lose Texas. They play Virginia Tech early, like randomly lose to Kentucky. But those are really the only two. Texas and Kentucky are probably the only two, maybe DePaul, would be like the only three non-conference losses they should have. Like, I mean, they should be what, like 7-3 going into conference play when they start the like actual run in January. If they're not that, then that's going to take a lot of conference wins to come back.
Yeah, and conference wins I think are going to be hard to come by, and we'll talk about the ACC as a whole.
Yeah. But,
it's not going to be easy for them to get conference wins, so the ones that they do get.
Don Calipari's wins count for him this year. Because Kenny Payne wins all the games for John Calipari, so
yeah.
If we're doing that, then he keeps his job.
Sure. All right. So let's. And the last one I have. Actually, we're gonna nix this one. It's gonna talk about Syracuse, but I think we're gonna talk about them enough in team rankings. So let's get into team rankings then. All right. So we'll snake this. So with the number one, you'll go. Then I'll go. And then I'll go number two, and you'll go number two, and then vice versa. All right. So, who is your number one team in the ACC preseason right now?
We talked about them being overrated, maybe, but I think Duke gets it. They're going to be good.
Okay.
If talent wins out over experience, Duke wins the conference.
That's a fair point.
Yeah.
I have Miami as my number one team winning the ACC. Repeat, and outside of 2021, 2022, do you know the last time that Duke won the ACC outright?
What would that be, 19?
2009 and 2010.
Damn.
Exactly. So this is why, yes, I think Duke is the better team, but I think to win the ACC, which is what we're predicting right now, I think Miami's going to do it. Miami just gets it done. Miami has won a decent amount. I mean, typically it's either Miami, Virginia, or UNC if you look at the last 10 years. So Duke was the one that, you know, last time they won, besides 2021, 2022, when they had Paolo Banchero, was 2009, 2010, when they won the championship. So, so that's why I have there. And then I have Duke right there, close second. I think they'll drop a game that they shouldn't. That's in typical fashion. I think a lot of people agree with that. Yeah, Duke is my number two, but it's like splitting hairs right there, man. That's how close I think it is. Who's your second team?
I have Clemson at two, Miami at three. This is a little bit of spoiler for some accolades we have later, but I think Clemson's going to be really good. They return a lot. And Miami at three. I mean, same thing. I think all three of these teams, and honestly, even the next two, are pretty close. I could see any of these three teams, plus UNC is my four, spoiler alert. I could see any of those four teams winning the ACC. And I think there's a pretty clear, like...
The top five, the top of the ACC is so strong this year, I feel like. I have Clemson at three and Virginia at four. But like I said, these are all splitting hairs. I could see Clemson end up being number one after beating like Duke like on a random Tuesday night and beating Miami on a random Saturday. That's just how it could play out. PJ Hall returning is huge for Clemson. Reese Beekman returning for Virginia.
Dog.
Yeah. This is going to be a tough conference to pick. I think like last year we were totally off on our predictions and rightfully so. This year is probably going to be the same thing. So so you said you had UNC at four. Who do you have at five?
Five, I have UVA. Reese Beekman's really good. They also have Ryan Dunn, who I think will be like kind of a sneaky NBA guy that will maybe surprise some people. He'll probably be like third or fourth in their rotation, honestly. But 6'8 sophomore that should be pretty solid on offense. I think he kind of has like tools that people are looking for in a role player in the NBA. So I think he'll be like one of the guys that's kind of surprising this year. Isaac McNeely also is really good for them on the guard side. So they should be fun to watch.
Yeah.
They will also struggle with size though. They have no one over 6'9" on their roster. So I think that's honestly kind of a theme for the ACC as a whole. Is there's just not a ton of size.
No, there isn't. And we'll talk about that in our best pro prospect, but yeah, the size is kind of crazy.
It's nuts. So, yeah. I like Virginia a lot this year. Plus, they're always going to be one of those teams that kills in the regular season just because they have a strange defense that they do really well because Tony Bennett is a great coach and they'll grind teams out.
They won't score a lot, but man, they won't let you score a lot either. So I have UNC and Syracuse as my five and six, which Syracuse, I think people probably be like, wow, that's a little high. But I'll explain it later. But mainly UNC, I think, they have a lot of experience and I talked them up a little bit earlier, but there still is this, they haven't been the UNC of old. Basically ever since Cole Anthony left, they've just been a really weird and hard to predict team. And so that's how kind of where I placed them at. So Syracuse, this is going to be not your father's, not your daddy's Syracuse team. You know what I mean? Not Jim Boeheim.
God.
Yeah. It's going to be, do I think they're going to go zone? Yes. I think that's still in their DNA. Are they going to go zone for the entire 40 minutes that they play? No. And they're going to rely on athleticism and not nepotism. So it's going to be really refreshing to watch. So
this might be the first time in literally my entire lifetime that I will be able to watch a Syracuse game and somewhat enjoy it.
Yeah.
That's so fun.
Yep. So who do you have as your sixth and seventh team?
Sixth, I have a little bit of a homer pick, but I got Wake there at six, and then Virginia Tech at seven. I think these two teams are both kind of like interchangeable. Wake will have a very good offense and will probably struggle on defense, which is how Steve Forbes likes to set his team up. Bethan Reed can be a – we're talking about size, though. There's like no size across the league, and then there's just Wake Forest team that has – Andrew Carr at 6'9", Matthew Marsh at 7'1", Ethan Reed at like 6'11". Like, no one has any big guys. And then you just have Wake, who has like three or four guys that are 6'10 or taller, which is going to be fun and should make them an interesting matchup across the board when you're watching them in ACC play. And then Virginia Tech should have a solid veteran laden squad that, should be really, really good on the offensive side as well, especially shooting-wise, and should be pretty balanced.
Yeah. I have those two teams respectfully at 7 and 8, so Wake at 7 and the Virginia Tech at 8. So pretty much, like I said, splitting hairs there. One of the best things about Wake's transfer portaling was that you got the Central Michigan guard, Kevin Miller. His nickname is Boopy. Love it. Absolutely love that nickname so much. Like, if you're calling somebody Boopy, it's either they're a little adorable or they're scrappy and you can do that. And so I think he's going to be really fun to watch because he only played 4 games for Central Michigan, but he averaged like 18.5 points a game in the 4 games that he played. So Duke could get buckets. And it's going to fill that. It's off the bench, obviously, but I think he could play his way into the starting lineup potentially. But yeah, and we'll talk about more with Wake because I have one of their players as my breakout player of the year. But yeah, I mean, Wake and Virginia Tech both, I think, are going to be fine teams. And it sucks because I say that they're at 7 and 8, but I think that's how it speaks to how good the ACC is. So we were talking about this earlier off pod. But it's like, it's hard to tell. Is ACC good this year, or are they just fairly top heavy and the rest of them's dragging? And we'll talk about that a little bit more. Yeah. But the way that we're talking about these teams now, I think 7 and 8, Wake and Virginia Tech will give, you know, maybe 4 and 5 SEC teams or Big Ten teams or Big 12 teams some fits. And I think that speaks to the depth of how good ACC is this year, which has been opposite of what we've talked about in the past couple of years, where the ACC has been like one or two really good teams and the rest has been dragging them down. But yet those one or two really good teams have made it really far in the tournament. So I don't know.
Or a team like UNC made it really far in the tournament. No, I agree. I think the tournament teams in the ACC this year are a little bit stronger overall than they have been in the past. We'll get to like the 12 through 15 range and we'll,
That balance things out for sure. But I mean, this is still I think this is a 5 bid league right now. I could very well see five of these teams go into the NCAA tournament.
I'll go 6 and expect one of,
I mean, for sure, 5, I think it could be 6 or 7. Yeah. It really could. Like, it just depends on how the other conferences fan out as well, too. But, all right, so, yeah, that's my 7th and 8th team. So, who's your 8 and 9 team?
I have Georgia Tech here at 8. I don't love Georgia Tech's team, but the reason I have them here above the rest of the teams is I think they're one of the few remaining teams that will be balanced. The ACC is really leaning into the whole offensive mindset, and a lot of the teams below them are going to be trying to be good offensive teams and will end up being really, really bad defensive teams. So I think that just kind of, I think Georgia Tech should be one of the more consistent teams, even if they're not one of the better teams, and that will allow them to be higher in the rankings. And then Pitt here, again, just kind of, they should be one of the more balanced teams. That's why I kind of put them here above a couple of the other teams, that we have. Yeah, I guess that's kind of my thought process there.
I gotcha. I have as my 9 and 10 teams. I have NC State and Pitt. And I will talk, give my justification for Georgia Tech being lower when I get to them. But NC State, you know, they lose Tre'Quavion Smith, which is a huge loss, as well as Jarkel Joyner. Those are two 17 point plus per game.
It's a lot to replace.
But they did replace them with DJ Horn, who was actually pretty good for Arizona State last year. Jaden Taylor from Butler, and then Ben Middlebrooks from Clemson, which obviously we know Clemson was a solid team last year. So they replaced the scoring pretty well with the guards.
Casey Morthell should be really, really good for them this year.
Yeah, that's true too. I like what they did in replacing those. DJ Horn was really fun to watch, in my opinion. So I will root for him wherever he kind of goes. And then with Pitt, you know, Jeff Capel, like, he just always has them in a position to win those sleepy Tuesday night games. So, you know, like, he added some people. They got a transfer from Rhode Island, Ishmael Leggett. Got a transfer from High Point, who was, like, their best player, and Zach Austin. They got a lot of freshmen, obviously. And I just think Jeff Capel is, like, a good coach, and he'll have those guys, you know, playing some decent basketball. Obviously, finishing 10th in the ACC isn't playing the best basketball, but they'll still be a tough team and a tough out on those sleepy Tuesday night games, for sure.
We were talking about size earlier. They're a team that has a decent amount of size. Zach Austin, 6'5". They have a couple guys that'll be 6'7" and above in their starting roster. So in a league that, where we talked about, some of the backcourts are, like, 6'3" dominated. They should have some positional size advantage at Pitt, which should help them a decent amount.
Yeah. All right. So who do you have at your 11 and 12? Or 10 and 11. I'm sorry.
10 and 11. Yeah. NC State is here. Love the additions. You said DJ Burns is an absolute monster of a human. He's not the tallest, but in terms of size, it's hard to talk about size in the ACC and not mention DJ Burns. And then I have Florida State at 11. He is super fun. Have a couple other guys that I think will do. Plus, I honestly just like the ageless wonder that is, shoot, what's his name? Why am I blanking? Leonard Hamilton.
Yeah.
Primo Spears should be solid for them. They should be a really balanced team that have 4 or 5 guys on a given night that can really lead them, which I don't know if they're going to be, like, Cameron Fletcher is still one of their, like, 5 top players, which, did you know that Cameron Fletcher is dating
Angel Reese?
Yeah, what the hell?
He should be better, right? Like, he should get better, like, having to play her one-on-one.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, literally, you should be grinding every day, playing her in one-on-one to get better.
He's living, loving basketball, like, IRL.
Yes, exactly. Do that shit. But no, they should be a pretty balanced team that has 6 or 7 guys that on any given night can be one of their, like, 2 or 3 best players. So that's fun. I just doubt their, like, kind of overall ceiling, unless Bobby Allard just decides to completely go off, which I think he might still be a year away, but
that's fair. I have FSU at 11 as well. So we're pretty much in cahoots there. Darren Green Jr. I think is a fine player. So I think he'll be good for them in year 2 for him, or this is year 4. I mean, excuse me. Baba Miller, and we'll talk about him later, but we had to free him last year. And I still think, I don't know. I think Leonard Hamilton's seat is getting a little hot because they've been down. But getting Jameer Watkins, getting Josh Nickleberry, getting Primo Spears, he's got more talent this year than he's had to work with. So, yes, we have him at 11. That doesn't mean they won't exceed that. Because Leonard Hamilton is still a good coach and gets guys into the NBA.
Is this a year where it's helpful that their football team is really good so that he can kind of fly under the radar? Because no matter what, they're going to be
absolutely
happy with sports. Like,
absolutely. Same with Louisville. I mean, we'll talk about Louisville once we get to them. But, I mean, like, Louisville surpassing their, in football, their total basketball win total in week five is kind of crazy. But, yeah, they are FSU basketball flying under the radar. It's going to be kind of insane. They also got that, I think they're, did their basketball team, what was it? My buddy Marco, shout out to Marco Carey. Fellow listener of the pod, had messaged me about somebody that they got, a transfer they got from Michigan State, I think for football, that also played at Michigan State for basketball. And he's wondering if that person's going to play, and I can't remember who it is.
I'll look it up while you're saying your next teams.
But yeah, so if you can find that, that'd be great. I doubt he's going to play basketball at FSU. But they did go 9-23 last year and 7-13 in conference play and finished 12th in the ACC. So you never know what's going to happen. That
is it Keon Coleman?
Yes. It was Coleman. Yeah. So
I doubt they let that man play basketball, considering he like is in contention to be the number two wide receiver taken in next year's draft. But
that's, I agree with you. We could have used, you know, like in hindsight, Kentucky could definitely have used Lynn Bowden at some point in basketball, but either way. My next team is Georgia Tech. I am not high on this Georgia Tech team. I think they just have a lot to prove. You got Damon Stoudamore's first year coaching. The amount of players that they got, the transfers that they got, Amari Abram. I watched a lot of SEC basketball last year. I do not remember hearing that name. Kawasi Reeves. I watched a lot of SEC basketball last year. I do not remember hearing his name against Florida. They did get Ebenezer Duwanu from NC State. Again, watched a lot of NC State last year. Don't remember this kid. So they got a lot of, like, it seems like leftovers from the transfer portal. And mm-hmm. It's just, it feels like they're going to have to, like, put together a puzzle that's with different pieces. So I'm not high on Georgia Tech for that regard. I don't know. We'll see. If they prove it wrong, prove it wrong. But right now, finishing 12th seems more likely than finishing anything above like 8, in my opinion.
Yeah. Like I said, I had them higher just because I think that they're going to be a solid team kind of across the board. Especially on offense and defense.
Yeah.
But it would not shock me if they finished down here as opposed to in the like 8 or 9 range.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. Who do you have for 13 and 14? Actually, our last three are the same. So we could just share all the last three.
Yeah. I had Syracuse at 12. They're the only team that I've left out the top three. I love Judah Mintz and JJ Starling. I don't think I like any of their other players, really.
That's fair.
I think those two will win them a lot of games, but I think if any team has any sort of perimeter defense, they're going to struggle because I don't really know if they have anyone else that can
counterpoint
make a difference there.
They don't do well in the perimeter, neither of those two. I think Judah shot like 30% and JJ 29%.
I just mean like guarding perimeter player.
That's fair. I didn't know if you meant for shooting. I'm like, sure, yeah, go ahead, guard the shooting because they're just going to drive that sucker in.
Teams that can guard guards.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
On ball defense.
Yeah.
So I, plus just like a new coach, new system. There's just a lot of change, and so I'm kind of buying low on them. Then I have BC at 13, Notre Dame at 14, Louisville at 15.
I do too as well for the
list. So they're last until proven otherwise. Notre Dame loses Mike Bray and JJ Starling. That team is pretty
And the thing with Notre Dame, we were talking about it off pod too. Micah Shrewsbury brought one transfer from Penn State, a Penn State team that made it to at least the second round of the tournament, if not the third round, I can't remember. But they made it kind of surprisingly further than I thought. They brought one transfer in from Penn State. Yes, he did recruit well of the state of Pennsylvania to Notre Dame still, but that's not saying a whole lot. So
yeah,
I'm not high either on just because I don't know the names, and that could be casual take of me, but
I mean
I do follow recruiting more than the average person, so there's that. Yeah, I'm with you. Notre Dame, like Shrewsbury's got to prove a lot, and it took them a while to make Penn State even somewhat respectable in the Big Ten. So
yeah, he's not exactly working with a cupboard full of talent either coming in.
No, it was really a lateral move in my opinion. Like Notre Dame basketball is not like it was great under Mike Bray in like 2015, but before that it really wasn't that great, and it has been that great after. And Penn State, same thing. Like they're always going to be a football school, so you know, like it is what it is. And then with you know, Boston College, yeah. Jeff Goodman has him so high. He has him at like 6 or 7. I don't see it. I get they return a lot. Getting to
like 10 or 11, maybe.
Yeah, I don't see that at all. Yeah, I just don't know.
Has them at 10. No, has them at 11.
Quinn Post is pretty good when he's healthy. He's definitely like a solid, you know, like solid big man. But I don't think like he's going to win you the ACC or even get you in top 6 in the ACC.
Yeah, I don't know either.
And they do return a lot, but they also lost one double digit per game score in Makai Ashton Langford. So they get the transfer from Charleston Southern, who had a decent year, obviously, and Claudel Harris Jr. So I don't know. It's just I don't know enough about them to say, yes, this is going to be a top 7 or 8 team in the ACC.
Yeah, so, me either.
So, okay, so let's go ahead and move on. That's our rankings, and we – I don't know if we'll post it or not, but you could definitely – listen to this and decide how bad it is or not. I feel like we're supposed to be like, wow, these are really terrible. But sure, I'll make a graphic. Why not? It won't take too long. Yeah. All right. Let's do our. We're just instead of doing a first team, we're gonna do our own all ACC team, but we can't use the same people. So we're gonna snake it. So you know, Dal will go first, but then I'll have the next two picks, and then he'll go second and third, and then vice versa. So Dal, you have the first pick in this draft here. Who is your first team all ACC player?
I am going to go with my. I'll take a big man. I'll go PJ Hall.
Wow. That's kind of crazy, man.
So thought process. Clemson is going to be good, and I think he will be by far their best player. And the person that I assume that you're going to take is going to be on a team that has more options.
That's so fair.
That's fair. Not having as big of a role.
If you're taking
who I assume you're going to take, which is probably the actual best player in the league, but just not the, like, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I get that. I'm taking Kyle Filipowski from Duke. Like, not even a question.
Are we snaking this?
Yes, we are snaking this. So, with my second pick, I'm actually going to go Nigel Pack from Miami, because I also have Miami finishing number one in the ACC, and I think he's going to be a big reason as to why they will finish number one.
Yeah, so who do you
second and third?
He can shoot about 38, 39, 40% from three. He should be really, really, really good.
Yeah. You got second and third picks now.
Okay. I'm going to go – do I do it? Should I?
I don't know who you're thinking of, but sure, go for it.
It's a pick that I don't like. Actually, it's two picks. I'm going to go a guard here who I think is going to be the best, one of the best defenders in the league.
That's
Tyrese Proctor from Duke.
That's fair.
Is just good. And then as gross as this makes me feel, everyone fucking loves him and he sucks and needs a good job, but Armando Bacot is going to do it. Like, if he got voted there last year, he's going to get votes again this year and it's going to be annoying. So I'll go Bacot. But yeah. Still, sir, get a job.
I am. This is a tough one. Actually, it's not that tough a one. I'm going to go with my third pick. I'm going to go with Harrison Ingram.
Interesting. Okay. I like it.
And dang, I don't know. This fourth pick is tough because I definitely need another guard. But I mean, it's not like I'm building a team, right? It's just first team all ACC.
Yes.
Okay. And I'm going with Reese Beekman as my fourth pick.
Boo. That's a good pick. I am going to go with two accumulators here who I think will literally just play. Actually, hold on. Let me look at stats real quick. Yeah, that's gross. That's not as gross. All right. I'm going to go Judah Mintz.
That's a good pick.
A guard. And then I kind of feel like I need another forwardy guy, but I'm not really seeing anyone that I love that spot.
JJ Trainer, go for it.
Yeah, if I wanted to be wrong. Ooh. Let's do it. I'm going to pick kind of off the beaten path. Oh, this is my last pick. Damn it. I feel like I need another forward, but I'd want to pick someone else. We'll go forward anyway. I'm going to go with Blake Henson.
Dang it. That's who I was going to take, obviously. That's
not the right column. I think that as modern basketball kind of gets into more popularity, the fact that he shoots, I think, will be a big kind of like ball in his court for that. I think we'll probably, we both had Pitt around the 9-ish mark.
Yeah.
I think he'll just like play a decent amount of minutes as well, which I think helps just in like accumulating stats. He doesn't turn the ball over a ton. Torvik has him listed at shooting 255 threes at a 38% clip. So if he does that, I feel like that's a pretty solid choice there.
Yeah. I'm kind of stuck on this last pick.
I'm not going to help you, but I'll tell you who I was looking at after you get done.
Well, I'm going to reuse another team because I think if I have Miami finishing first or Duke finishing second, you have two all ACC guys on those teams, but I just don't know which one I want to go with. You know, screw it. I'm going with Duke's Mark Mitchell.
Okay. Interesting. That's not who I thought.
I was pretty close to going with not Wuga Poplar, but Nourchad Ameer for Miami. But I'm going to go with Duke's Mark Mitchell because I think the void that Derek Lively is leaving defensively, Mark Mitchell can fill. 6'9", you know, forward, sophomore, taking that defensive step up. And then I think offensively, you know, he's going to be in the dunker spot there. So should be fine. That's I'm going to get love from Duke fans and hate from UK fans. But this is what it is, man. Our buddy at Duke Update, obviously Grant, is going to love this. And he's going to say I'm going to win. So I'm just going to go for popularity votes here. So, yep, that's what we got. So, all right, let's move on to.
If you had to pick a six man, who are you picking?
Six man, we haven't mentioned his name on this part for all ACC, but six man might be JJ Starling. I don't know, either that or Jared McCain. So having three Duke guys would be crazy, but I do think Jared McCain's going to be a really good freshman for Duke this year.
I don't like his playing time opportunities.
Yeah, that is fair.
Being behind Tyrese Proctor and Jeremy Roach does not feel like a good way to get a ton of run.
Yeah, that is totally fair. So who was your sixth man if you're going to pick one?
It was either going to be Casey Morcell or Hunter Couture. Just because I think they're going to be two of the best shooters in the league, and they're going to shoot a lot. And I think they both play a lot, especially Casey Morcell. Torvik has him projected to play 87.3% of their minutes. So he's playing like upwards of, what, like 36 minutes a game? And if he does that and shoots above 40%, which they have him projected at, he'll be one of the most efficient players in the league.
Yeah.
And I could see him definitely. Yeah, he shot 35% last year. So if that's the case, then yeah, I could see him being one of the guys.
Yeah, I could definitely see that too. So, all right, let's move on to our season superlative. So these are obviously, we're going to do like player of the year, coach of the year, but yeah, those are kind of standards, but we added some other ones. So we have within this new day and age, you know, people just say newcomer, but I like saying freshman of the year and then transfer of the year because transfer is a huge part of the game now. We also have breakout player of the year. What team scares you the most? Meaning if your favorite team was playing them, you know, playing a certain team, which team would scare you the most on who you have to play? Best pro prospect, and then the sleeper team of the year. So without further ado, Dal, who is your ACC player of the year?
He was my first pick in the draft just now. It's PJ Hall. I think Clemson will be really good. I obviously have them at second in the league. So I think PJ Hall is going to be a big part of that. He just like fits the college basketball game a ton as well. And so he might not be like the best player, but I think he'll end up being player of the year.
That's solid reasoning. I have Kyle Filipowski. I mean, we're talking about a kid that could have went lottery this past year in the draft that he was projected some lottery, at least like, you know, 15 to 20 range, at least in the average. So we have a kid that's projected this high in the draft that returns to college basketball. He's going to have more opportunities than I think he had last year when they were figuring out what they were offensively as an identity. And then, I think he could be exposed defensively without Derek Lively, like we've talked about, but still think he's going to be a solid player and average probably double digits, like in the 20s per game, because he's just that good. And then my coach of the year, ACC coach of the year, Jim Larrañaga. Again, I have Miami finishing first again. That'll be 2 years in a row. They made the Final Four last year. They lose Isaiah Wong, but man, they return a lot. And so like they're not skipping a beat. Miami's just the sleepy, like, good team always. So Kentucky fans complaining about playing Miami, like, it's a good ACC team to face off in the first ACC-SEC challenge. Yes, it's correct. It's not UNC or Duke, but we play those teams all the time. Like, give me Miami, who is constantly knocking off Duke and UNC left and right in the ACC. So yeah.
It's also like, you know, like resume wise, it doesn't need to be Duke or UNC. I know that there's more buzz like nationally and everything, but I don't think that's necessarily going to be a like worse win or loss depending on what we do, as it would have been playing one of those other teams.
Who's your coach of the year?
Keeping on the Clemson train, this is where the Clemson train stops, but it's Brad Brunell. If I have them at second, I think that they're going to have higher-ish expectations compared to what they normally do.
Yeah.
I think if they're finishing second, that he gets coach of the year as well.
Yeah, that's fair. If you have him finishing second, for sure. That's,
yeah.
When it comes to our coach of the year, it always depends on like who we have finishing high. I mean, shoot, if Red Autry has Syracuse finishing 5 or 6th, very well could win coach of the year, though. So I don't know. All right. So who's your freshman of the year then?
I have Elliot Cadeau. I like his. So they have RJ Davis in the backcourt, but other than that, all of their other like big returning players are frontcourt players. So I think that he's just going to have. There are a lot of good freshmen in the league this year that came in. Duke has a couple that have come in. But in terms of like playing time, I think Cadeau has one of the better shots at just like getting a lot of playing time in general.
Yeah.
So it's more of like a like an opportunity thing for me there as opposed to a like pure talent. Not that he's not talented. I mean, he's a 5-star freshman, but I like his prospects to just play more than most of the other guys. So he's my pick.
That's fair. I have Jared McCain, which is kind of opposite of what for your reasoning of why you have Elliot Cadeau. But I do think that his impact as a freshman is going to be greater than we've seen in a while at Duke outside of Paolo Banchero, like in Kyle Filipowski. Like we have those two. Jared McCain's coming into a situation where they're not relying on freshmen. And so he's just going to stand out because he's going to have those freakishly insane plays that he can make because he is a solid playmaker. And it's just going to stand out and wow people. His numbers might not be great, but he's still going to be high on draft boards and he's going to be looked at as a solid prospect because of it. My transfer of the year is going to be JJ Starling. He was asked to do a lot at Notre Dame. He had basically league guard roles. I don't think that's his best style of play. Like, he needs to be free flowing and just like, hey, ISO this guy, get to the basket. This is what he can do. And when you have somebody else that can also do that in Judah Mintz, it's just like, okay, you could run two ISOs at the top of the key and either one can get to the bucket with ease. And then like, I think his shooting will increase because of it, because I think, you know, he shot 29% last year, sure. But he was also, like I said, like having to fight everything on his own. But if you have Judah Mintz, like being able to drive at the basket at will, and then just able to kick out to JJ Starling on a set shot, not like creating something off the dribble, then I think his shooting efficiency is going to increase as well. So for that reason, that's why I have JJ Starling.
Interesting. Yeah. If he can shoot better from three, that will definitely be helpful. I am kind of skeptical on whether or not.
I mean, I understand the skepticism, but again, his efficiency was low because I think who else besides Cormac Ryan was going to take a shot last year for Notre Dame.
True. Know? I worried about the same thing with Syracuse, and Judah Mintz is a great guard, but is great only really at getting to the basket. He's not a shooter. So I just worry about them not being able to create enough spacing around those two to really let them get better from a shooting perspective. But could be wrong. My pick is Harrison Ingram. You drafted him in the first team draft. And he was maybe the best player in the Pac-12 last year. Played on a pretty bad Stanford team, but I think that he will be really, really, really good. And I'm kind of sad that you got him in this draft, in the draft earlier, because obviously I'm a big fan. So I think it's him. I think the other player, and I couldn't be so homer to pick him, but I think that Hunter Salas, been rave reviews coming out of the Wake Forest camp on him. Obviously, former 5-star guard, transferred in from Gonzaga. I think he is the other guy, along with these two, that I think are really in contention for transfer of the year.
Yeah, and those are two great picks. So I totally agree. Yeah. Who's your breakout player of the year?
Breakout. He's not really a breakout if you watch a bunch of ACC basketball, but I think that he will have a much larger role just because Jekyll Jr. and Tre'Quavion Smith are gone, and it's going to be DJ Burns. He's going to absolutely eat in the conference play just because the grind of
bless you
playing two games a week as a big body that's banging up against you. He's going to play probably, 28, 29 minutes if he can really kind of get his conditioning down a little bit better, which he's done a better job every year. So I don't know how much of a breakout he is, but I think that he's going to be one of those players that people will become a much bigger, like, household name just because he's also fun to watch because he's a giant human.
Yeah. My breakout player of the year is actually one Cameron Hildreth.
British Luca, you mean?
Sure. But we see the departure of Tyree Appleby and Davion Williamson and Bobby Clinton. Yes, we, you know, Wake did get Hunter Salas, Kevin Miller, Efton Reed. You know, great, sure. I think Cameron, I mean, he averaged almost 13 points a game last season. And yeah. So his role is going to increase. He's the established player on this team. They're coming to him. You know, like, I think Forbes is going to say, like, hey, we're going to ride or die with Hildreth here. And I wanted to check his usage from last year. He was the number two significant contributor on this team last year. Like,
yep.
Behind, guess who? Tyree Appleby, who averaged 18 points a game. So he's just going to bump up onto that status. He's going to be a go-to guy for Wake. Knowing the system, knowing that he can shoot pretty well. I think it wouldn't be a surprise. I mean, he went from 5 points a game to 12 points a game last year. It's probably going to jump up another five or six points per game just because his usage is going to be higher. So that is my quote unquote breakout player of the year. The team that scares me the most, if my favorite team, obviously, you know, either Kentucky or UCF being my two favorite teams to play from the ACC would 100% be Virginia. And that's because what we talked about earlier, and they could score 2 points all night, but they will keep you from scoring more than that. Like they are so good defensively. And it is Tony Bennett is just an animal when it comes to coaching defense. Buddy needs to get a freaking offensive coordinator sometimes, but my God, his defense is insane. So that always scares me because like, sure, you can face like high caliber offenses, but you know, everyone's due for a stinker night. When it comes to defense, there is no stinker nights on defense. Like you're always going to have like solid defense because it's not so much the ball falling the right way. It's how much effort and energy you give. And Virginia always gives like 110% effort and energy into defense. So
that's true. I went in terms of who scares you the most as a, like looking at the ACC. I sound like a broken record, I'm sure at this point, but size is going to be a big thing for the ACC this year. And Wake Forest is one of the bigger teams. Matthew March.
You are definitely a height supremacist, Dal. So you've always,
I mean,
you've
always been a height supremacist. That is true. Matthew March is an absolute matchup nightmare on the offensive end. Big dude, especially with Wake's guards being able to get downhill. That is a lob threat. He is massive there. I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up top two or three, even though he can't shoot. Top two or three in offensive grading purely. He's a little bit of a liability on defense, but we don't need to talk about that right now. But like, he is one of the scariest players on offense just to guard because he is such a matchup nightmare.
Yeah.
So I think Wake is also just kind of like, there's a lot of, not that they're like zigging when other teams are zagging, but they're just kind of like a weird team to guard. Cam Hildreth is an unconventional guard. They have a couple big men that are like 6'10", kind of stretch forwardy guys that are just, they just have like a weird team.
Yeah.
That if you're just like playing them on a Tuesday night, you already had to prepare for a team like on Saturday, whatever. It's just like a weird matchup. Not as drastic as like playing a Surface Academy in football where they run the option, but it's just like they're going to be super fast pace on offense. They have Damari Monsanto should be back and will just like chuck threes from forever because he has the greenest light possible.
Yeah.
They're just like a weird team that could beat you on any given night. So that's why I have them as the team that scares me the most.
That's fair. Who's your best pro prospect in the ACC?
So I don't know if I fully buy into this, but I don't think there's a slam dunk option here just because everyone that is on this list has like some sort of flaw.
Well,
I think Filipowski would be an easy choice to make here just because he was probably the highest ranked at the end of last year in terms of people that are returning. But I worry about his defensive fluidity, and I don't think he's as great of a like stretch big to be able to offset that lack of mobility. So I'm going kind of the safer route here and going Tyrese Proctor. I think he's going to have a big year this year. I think he is a plus size defensive point guard who, if he can flash a little bit more playmaking potential, I think that he will be end up being the best pro prospect, or at least the highest drafted pro prospect in this year's draft from the ACC.
Mine, it might sound a little crazy because he did not do well in the limited games he played last season, but it's actually Baba Miller. I mean, dude's like 6'11", but he has like wing intangibles. And he has a really good ball handling, and he has a good shot. Like, it's not a broken shot. So I think he takes a step up this year, and he's going to be definitely one of those draft picks that's like almost like Patrick Williams from FSU, or trying to think in recent history who's kind of stood out. That's like, sure, they didn't have like the stat stuffing, you know, like characteristics, but they were 100% like draftable based off of just like physicality and effort. This is him. Like, he's all potential, he's all promise. And he's just got a crazy pro like play style for being, again, a 6'11 forward with guard like mentality. So it's Baba Miller for me. So
I'm trying to look at last year. I mean, like, Leonard Miller, similar last name, obviously, yeah. Same last name. Yeah. Leonard Miller is one that kind of comes to mind.
Leonard Miller, I was high on him from the get-go. I know a lot of people weren't, but I wanted him at Kentucky so bad. And
yeah,
he visited, and it's like, nah, I'm going G League. Like, I'm out of here.
This is going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, it's harder to, like, to say the archetype that they are, because it's like, they're long forwards with guard-like skills that can shoot the ball well, but they don't show it in the stats. Like, it's just weird. Hard to pinpoint how they are. But it's definitely the future of the league. And it's like easy, like, Baba Miller's not going to go top 20, but, you know, some team that already is contending for a playoff is going to draft him and then have a diamond in the rough kind of deal.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely what you're hoping for.
Yeah.
Is that kind of long-term development.
Yep. Yeah.
I think if we do this, I think you will be saying this exact same thing next year.
Yeah.
Is kind of where I am on the Baba Miller journey. Just because he didn't get to play a ton last year, too. I think that really kind of probably set him back a little bit.
He missed the first half of the season.
Yeah.
And the team was already kind of in shambles at that point, too. Like, they had some sticker losses. We expect FSU to be one spot better than they were, than they finished last year. They finished 12th. We both have them at 11 this year. They could absolutely exceed that just because of the play of Baba Miller himself. So we'll see.
Yeah.
The sleeper team of the year for me is, if it hasn't been obvious, has been Syracuse. We talk about them. You're like, you don't like everybody except for Judah Mintz and JJ Starling, but we did forget to mention one name that we should be familiar with, and that's Chance Westry. Could be a six man, but also could
from cornerback from Kentucky.
No, the sophomore 6'6" guard from Auburn, who had limited minutes last year, but I do think he sat behind some craziness there. I think he's going to have a significant role. They could go like three guard lineup with, you know, JJ, Judah and Chance. And that could be fun. You know, could be kind of crazy. Obviously Mintz is the X factor here. And I think if he goes off on any given night, he could beat any one of these ACC teams, himself. So that's why I think they're the sleeper team of the year.
Yeah. It is funny. This is very much a niche comment, but it is funny that, and kind of sad to me that he's no longer at Auburn, because it was funny because we got Chris Westry after he was committed to Auburn.
Yeah.
And then they got Chance Westry, and it was like, that's some Inception stuff. I just changed this last minute, but my sleeper team is going to be UVA. I think it's for similar reasons to why it's like a who scares you the most on your end.
Yeah.
I also think people are just like kind of down on them. I feel like after their championship, championship year, it's kind of gone under the radar. People are like, oh, is Tony Bennett still like one of the best coaches in the league. They haven't really had a, they haven't really been able to put it together kind of since they won that title. But I think this might be the year. Reese Beekman was supposed to really break out last year. He did on the defensive end, but not as much on the offensive end.
Well, and I think part of that last year is they relied so heavily on Kihei Clark, and like in the ACC championship, he like hung a stunker or whatever. You know, I think it was that game. Like it was just awful in that game. So, I mean, yeah, sure. There's a reason he stuck around and was there for like 8 years. So, Kihei Clark kind of stinks. So,
I mean, that's a little harsh.
It is harsh. I lost a bet because of him.
Now the truth comes out.
It's personal.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they could be really good. I wouldn't be shocked if they end up, especially regular season, just because they are a team that with a play style that lends itself more to the regular season. I wouldn't be shocked if they end up closer to first or second than fourth or fifth, like we have them in the rankings so far. So.
Yeah. Yep. So, all right. Well, this has been the ACC preview.
Let's do last question. Guy that we haven't mentioned yet. Team. I don't know. What are you most excited for the ACC this year?
It's tough because, like, I feel like we've done a good job of mentioning the depth of ACC. We haven't really talked about Virginia Tech a lot, but there's not a lot to be desired there as far as what they got from who they have leaving versus who they have returning. They are going to be a scrappy team. Virginia Tech's always a scrappy team. But I just think the best thing for the ACC is that how deep they are. And we talked about it. We hit on it a couple times. But, like, you look at the bottom half of the SEC, and we're not talking about them as highly as we're talking about, like, a Syracuse or a Florida State or NC State. The bottom half of the SEC sucks. Bottom half of the Big – I mean, shoot, the top half of the Big Ten sucks, let alone the bottom half of the Big Ten. but that's just my bias coming through. The bottom – like, the Big 12 is pretty deep. I think this is the third deepest conference, maybe the second deepest conference outside of like the Big 12. Even then, the Big 12, a lot of their best players and have like went to other teams, right? The SEC now has Texas and Oklahoma included in it. So like there is a lot, like it's one of the more balanced conferences, and that's what I appreciate about it. Yes, the top half of the top five or top third, whatever you want to call it, of the ACC is obviously in the tournament firmly, but you can't tell me that like Wake isn't going to make the tournament. Syracuse can make the tournament. Virginia Tech, I mean, NC State, like DJ Horn could absolutely lead ACC, you know, like or NC State to the tournament appearance. Like it absolutely could happen. So Blake Henson could lead Pitt to an NCAA tournament appearance. So it's definitely deeper than we've seen the last like 2, 3, 4 years. Obviously highlighted by the main teams that we always talk about, but I mean, it should be exciting if you're a fan of any ACC team. And so for that, I tip my cap to them on that, because they easily could have succumbed to the mid that they've been the last few years outside of the top three teams. And that's not going to be the case this going forward this year.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Yeah, I'm very interested to see kind of how the middle of the pack shakes out, and if it is tournament level or just below, like kind of where that is, because that will definitely kind of swing how we view the ACC as a whole this year, I think.
Yeah.
I am most excited about the shooting in this conference. So you have Hunter Couture, I mentioned his name earlier, at Virginia Tech, that is projected to, on this is a on Torvik's website, projected to take 184 threes and shoot 42%. We have Casey Morcell, who's projected to shoot 190 and shoot 41%. Damari Monsanto, a low number at 215 in terms of attempts and shoot 40%. Nigel Pack right behind him. And then Josh Nickelberry at Florida State, all projected to shoot over, essentially over at or over 200 threes and shoot 40%. You got Jake Heidbreder at Clemson, who's also going to shoot a bunch. There just should be a lot of really, really good shooters. Like I mentioned earlier, a lot of those kind of lower teams are definitely ones that are leaning more offense than defense. I feel like it's kind of opposite of the Big 12. It's like the Big 12 will have some teams where it's like, all right, they're absolutely dreadful on offense, but their defense is really good, and that's what keeps them in games.
Yeah.
It'll probably be the opposite, and you'll have a lot of those bad teams that are giving up, that are scoring 80, 85 points on a team, but they're giving up 90, so they're still losing. And I'm just excited about the offensive firepower in the league this year.
Yeah, I think it should be more exciting league this year than we've seen the past couple of years. For that reason, like you said, the shooting should be there. And just like, I mean, you don't have Syracuse freaking running out of zone with, you know, five white guys. Like,
true.
Like you have star athletes doing star athlete things. You have a significant, that's going to be one of the better backcourts. Like, I don't think people realize that. Like, Judah Mensen's JJ Starling were two NBA projected drafted guys last year that decided. And they're relying on their athleticism to get buckets. And that's what we haven't seen, I feel like, in a while. And like, even dipping into the SEC, like, we haven't seen that from Kentucky. We haven't seen that from even like Auburn, obviously. Like, they relied on these like short, stubby guys. Like, you know, like there's a lot to be desired in this league. And we're going to see that this year. So sure. I'm excited for that. Okay. So let's get out of here, 'cause we are way over the time that we probably talked about doing it, but, we are going to talk, I said in text originally Big East, but I think technically because the Big 12 uses numbers instead of actually writing out the word 12,
it would be,
we're going to go with Big 12 next. So we are going to record either Thursday or Friday sometime during that time. So this is Tuesday as you're listening and when it's released. Be on lookout for another episode this week. We're going to try and hit two a week on these conference previews. And I'm going to put together a fantasy basketball draft again.
Ooh, yeah.
Because that's always a good time. So you'll be hearing these names again. But for now, this has been the ACC, and this has been Beers and Buckets. So follow us on Instagram and TikTok. Also, shout out to – I think we're going to go ahead and name WT as the winner with Hop and Rock for our mascot name.
Let's loop up offline, because I feel like that the other option is one that I saw. Maybe it was like Buzz and Bounce or something, but that is B&B.
That's fair. That is B&B names. Initials. How about we put a vote to it? We'll put it on a vote for a week and see. But Hop, I mean, Hop and Rock definitely has my vote, because I mean, that's a great, great name. But either way, we are with this new logo. I mean, I would love to get some merch made. So if this sparks your interest and you actually are going to buy something, please let us know, because I 100% need an excuse to make a shirt with those guys on it. And if it's that we have to have a minimum order of like 20 shirts, I'm going to do that. So just let me know, please, please, please. But yeah, follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Beers and Buckets Pod. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you're watching this on YouTube, thank you. And if you aren't watching this on YouTube and you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, go ahead and like and leave a review of this show, and then go to our YouTube channel and subscribe. And then, yeah, and then check out Variety Sports Network for more shows like this one. So this has been The Bottom Line, because Connor said so. It's great to be back. We are going to be back with you either probably Friday morning. You're going to hear our beautiful voices. So we will talk to you then. So appreciate you guys listening. Peace.